Aloha, I'm Yanji Denise, sitting in for Catherine Cruz. Thanks for joining us here on The Conversation Hawaii Talks. It's Thursday, July 18th. We're speaking today about smartphones and the impact these devices are having on kids at school and beyond. 42% of American children have a smartphone by the age of 10. By 14, that number jumps to 91%. These devices open windows to the world, but not everything out there is child-friendly. And when a kid is engrossed in a screen, what are they missing out on in the real world? A number of states have now banned phones in public schools, so should Hawaii follow suit? We'll discuss the impact of these devices with a middle school principal, a high school student, and a therapist. And we want to hear from you. The numbers to reach us are 808-941-3689 on Oahu or 1-877-941-3689 on the neighbor islands. Welcome back to The Conversation. Our guests today are Britt Young, a licensed marriage and family therapist, Ethan Yang, a rising senior at Kaiser High School and the Board of Education student representative, and Jarrett Middle School principal, Reed Kuba. Thank you all for being here this morning. We are speaking today about smartphones and students. And Britt, I want to start with you and that statistic we started with at the top of the hour, the idea that 42% of American children have a smartphone by the age of 10. What do you see as the impact of these devices on the patients that come into your practice?
Hey, good morning. So even I was a little startled by that number. I think it rises every year, so you've got to keep up with these stats. It was a little bit disarming for me to hear that particular number because age 10 is right in the middle of very expansive and rapid brain development, really all the way till age 25. But you're looking at the way a child sees the world being highly developed between the ages of like 6 and 12. So you're right in that meaty center of questions. Is the world a safe place? Is the world a trustworthy place? What does it mean to be a person where I live and in my family? What's the role of grown-ups? Budding pre-adolescence and puberty. So that number, that age is really low. And I think the more we can push that number up little by little, you just gain a little bit of maturity every year. And how it reflects in the office is pretty obvious the first thing, of course. The children come in, the preteens come in, and everything that they know about how they relate to the world is oftentimes through their device or social media, who likes them, who doesn't like them, what kind of activities they're supposed to like, what pop stars they're supposed to like, all is filtered through this lens. So it's very difficult oftentimes to relate to a patient around anything that is not related to these externalities. What's interesting to me, though, as a family therapist, is how much conflict these devices bring in very early. So a 10-year-old can be very compliant. This is a nice age. If anybody has kids at this table, it's kind of nice from age 4 to 12. You're like, oh, they're kind of nice. They watch their sister. They feed the dog. They still want to please mom and dad. However, where the conflict comes is devices and screen time. So not only do you see conflict between parent and child, how much screen time the child gets, and you know that feeling when you walk down the hall and you're like, ah, oh, darn it, I got to take that phone away. And you just know it's going to erupt into something. Okay, so that's the conflict there. Conflict between parents. Hey, what if one parent wants to give more screen time than the other? And now mom and dad or mom and dad and dad are fighting over what to do. There's conflict between siblings. He got more. She got more. She gets to do this. He gets to do this. And so there's sort of like this inner circle of how it affects a child. Then there's this peripheral circle, this orbit, if you will, of conflict around the device. So that's what we see is how it affects the lens and how it affects the family system.
Yeah, and widening that circle out, let's think about the school environment, Principal Kuba. You know, just last week, Virginia Governor Glenn Youngkin signed an executive order that restricts cell phones on all public school campuses throughout that state. Florida, Indiana, Ohio have all done this, the same. Los Angeles School District in California, not the state, but the district has done that as well. A number of other states appear headed this way. In Virginia, the governor cited students' academic achievement and mental health. I'm interested to know what you do on your campus and what the policy is for the DOE statewide.
So I'll start off with the DOE statewide. There is no statewide policy per se. So it comes down to individual schools and then sometimes individual classrooms. But at our school, we have a school-wide policy that as soon as they come onto campus in the morning, their cell phones should be put away, whether it's in their pocket or in their bag. And then from there, it should be kept put away all the way till the end of school. And then we explain to the students the reason why you can take it out after school is if you need to talk to your parents, call them to come and pick you up. But it should be put away even at lunchtime, even at recess, throughout the whole day.
Do you encounter any resistance from students or parents around the policy?
At this point, they understand what the policy is. We explain to parents, and I believe parents are grateful for that. And, you know, I see during recess and especially lunch where the students are more engaged with each other, you know, and enjoying talking with each other, playing. And that's what we want to see. And I think Britt mentioned that their brains are developing a lot during these adolescent years. So for us, we want to help that growth by minimizing screen time, taking out the social media factor, and then helping them to concentrate on academics, concentrate on making friends, talking with each other, enjoying each other. And so that's what, as a school, we push to make sure that their laptops, because they have individual laptops, we have them put that away during lunchtime so that they can play with each other, you know.
Yeah. Ethan, I'm interested to hear from you from the student perspective. I know you had shared with us earlier that in your middle school, devices were not allowed, similar to what Principal Kuba is describing, but in your high school, they are. Can you tell me about the difference between having the phones on campus and not having the phones on campus and what that has been like for you?
Yeah, for sure. So in my middle school years, specifically 6th and 7th grade, you know, during lunch, during recess, me and my friends, we would go out to the field and we would, like, play soccer because we couldn't use our phones. But transitioning into high school, you know, when phones are permitted, in my experience, freshman and sophomore year, you know, now that I could use my phone, let's say I was sitting in the back of the classroom, you know, a teacher wouldn't be able to see me. So I was on my phone and I found that, you know, it was very distracting. It was very hard for me to focus, especially with music. And, you know, the earbuds, that's kind of a big concern because a lot of students will have their earbuds in. They're not going to be able to hear anything the teacher is saying. So, yeah, our high school at the time, it's a very, it's not a statewide or like statewide policy. So it's classroom to classroom, teacher to teacher basis. So, yeah, for sure. I mean, having phones in high school was definitely something that I had to, you know, reflect on, and I had to realize that I had to control myself, and I found that by not using my phone as much, eventually I was able to focus a lot better.
Do you feel like you enjoyed that time in middle school better? Would you prefer it if there was a policy where they were not allowed in class or on campus?
Yeah, I mean, I think having the phones definitely limits social interaction for some people. You know, some people choose to be playing games during lunch, during recess. But, you know, on the flip side, there are the certain aspects where you do have to use your phone. So for me, if I have some activities after school or something and I need to let my parents know or whoever's going to pick me up, I will have to shoot them a text. Or if I need to, you know, check on my grades, check on assignments, because a lot of our schoolwork is digital. So, I mean, there is that balance between at the time when we didn't have phones, we were playing a lot. But especially in high school, a lot of our work is digital. Mm-hmm. So we do have to use our phones at that time.
And Principal Kuba, I mean, that's really the tension there, right? And COVID kind of accelerated that we went to an online learning model in a lot of ways. And it's hard to put the genie back in the bottle on that. What do you hear from teachers who maybe don't have the policy that you have? You know, what is that like for an educator to have to police what Ethan is talking about?
Yeah, without a school-wide policy, it does make it difficult for individual teachers. I can imagine that's how it was before. And having that school-wide policy at our school really helps out. Students understand. And in fact, students sometimes police each other. And we get in a classroom, you might get one student pointing to the other student while the teacher is teaching. And, kind of help out in that sense. But it does distract from education. It does distract from the learning. For us, we do sometimes allow it, but we also let the students know that, if the teacher allows it, then you are able to take out your phone. But we do have a one-to-one computer, so a lot of the electronics that come out would, be available on their laptops. So, kind of eliminates the need to take out their cell phones.
You are listening to The Conversation. If you're just joining us, we are talking about smartphones and kids, and we'd like to know what you've noticed in the young people in your lives. Do you think these devices are useful tools, or should they be delayed? You can join the discussion by calling us at 941-3689 or 1-877-941-3689 from the Neighbor Islands. I want to bring in an author and a book that a lot of folks are reading right now. It's been on the New York Times bestseller list for the last 15 weeks. It's called The Anxious Generation. The author is Jonathan Haidt, who is a social psychologist at New York University. He presents a lot of data that shows that mental health of adolescents plummeted in the 2010s, which is right around the time that smartphones began to be widely adopted. He finds that rates of depression, anxiety, self-harm, and suicide rose sharply, more than doubling by most measures. In a conversation with NPR's Steve Inskeep, he says that this affects both girls and boys.
You know, my son plays Fortnite, and I can see it's really fun. He's laughing his head off with his friends. But here's the thing. These platforms give boys what they want, but in a way that actually isn't as satisfying as if they were actually doing physical sports and, having conflicts with a group of other boys that were real. So, yeah, sure, it's fun, and they're interacting with other boys. But what happens to their mental state? They get really lonely. They start agreeing with statements on surveys. I often feel lonely. And it's a similar story for the girls. Girls are lured on by the promise of talk to everybody, find out what everyone's doing, gossip about people. You can get instant updates on everyone. And so you'd think that this is like girls' heaven. But actually, this is girls' hell. Everyone talking about everyone, able to shame or attack anyone anonymously, even on weekends. Mm-hmm. You can never escape. What happened when girls moved their social lives onto social media platform was the same as for boys on video platforms. They get really anxious, lonely, and depressed.
Britt, I'd love for you to react to that. Anxious, lonely, and depressed. We see the differences on how kids are engaging in this by gender, but the consequences seem to be the same.
I can't agree more with what he says, and it's so interesting. And you can't really argue too much with the data. So Facebook, remember, was unleashed campus by campus. So one campus would get Facebook, then the next one would get, and so we could see how many trips are kids making to the mental health centers. And every time it was released on a college campus, right, there would be an increase in reports of anxiety and depression. So the numbers don't lie. And what comes to mind akin to what the gentleman was saying is judgment. You know, Facebook all of a sudden, everybody's in everyone's business. You can post pictures, what people look like, and how hard that is on an adolescent. And my understanding is this gentleman also is a huge proponent of free play. And so part of it is the judgment and ridicule we can experience online. The other side is what are we missing out on? And my husband and I very early became fans. Well, I went to a Montessori school, so I've known Maria Montessori, her forever. And the idea that you are to use all your senses to learn something, that's why you pick up the toys and you interact and you can see and smell and hear and taste things, and how much that does for your well-being and development, that's also what you're missing out on. This free play, what are you doing? Let's kick the ball. Oh, you have a problem? Let's make some rules. Let's figure out the boundaries. And when it comes to sensorial play, it came to mind to me this morning that a smartphone is generally, besides holding the phone, you're seeing and hearing. Or maybe just seeing, like my kids use captions now. So you're using one, maybe two senses. And when you're out doing free play, you're smelling the air, you're feeling the grass, you're hearing the laughter, you're seeing your friends, you're really understanding the world in a different way. And these are all protectors from anxiety and depression. So you're adding this judgment and ridicule and possibly exposure to dangerous things, and you're taking away the sensorial free play that acts as armor against it. And so it's not surprising, of course, that rates of anxiety and depression have gone up. Self-harm in girls. Remember, too, that generally people will self-harm the way they know other people are self-harming. So as you see people online going, oh, you can use this to cut and you can use these shirts to cover it, that just plays more into this, like, contagion, yeah?
Wow, yeah. Wow. Ethan, I'd love to get your reaction to what the author was sharing there, that boys are playing together, but they're not necessarily connecting in the same way. Tell us a little bit about, you know, gaming on campus or off campus and what you think about what the author said.
Yeah, so a really big game right now is this mobile app called Brawl Stars. And it's a multiplayer game, and, you know, you can, like, queue up with friends and you can be playing with friends, but you know, it's kind of like, it's not very memorable. That's what I noticed. You play like during lunch and you're having a lot of fun in the moment, but you know, after it's like, you know, what did you really do? There's not really much memorable experience. There's not much fun, you know, compared to like going out with your friends and like, as I mentioned, playing soccer in middle school, you know, just a lot more. And it's also like physical exercise, so it's a lot more engaging.
Yeah, we've got a caller on the line right now. Isaac from Maui would like to share his perspective. Good morning, Isaac.
Hi.
Please go ahead.
Hi. So I'm Isaac. I am a teacher for handwork at the Haleakala Waldorf School in Kula on Maui. And we have a policy at our school, in all Waldorf schools actually across the country, that there are no devices with like screen devices allowed on campus at all. The students are allowed to keep it like in their backpack in case they really, really need it, but it has to be off. It's actually encouraged at home as well, all the way up until eighth grade, to not really be using these very much, specifically up until fifth, at least. Not even watching too many movies and all that kind of thing. And whenever I visit a school that doesn't have this policy, I can see the difference, like night and day, in the social atmosphere, just the joy that's happening. And I teach first through fifth grade, and there's the occasional student that you can tell doesn't really adhere to the policy at home, which, you know, you're not going to get kicked out or anything, but it's very clear the behavior differences. They're much more, they have much more problems with their attention, and their development seems to be impaired a little bit just from being on those devices like Fortnite and all that kind of thing. So I see it every day in my class, the positive outcomes of delaying allowing these devices with children.
Thank you so much for that, Isaac. Principal Kuba, what are your thoughts about what he just shared? Do you think that you can tell the difference when you walk onto a campus that allows these devices and one that doesn't? What do you see?
Yeah, I'd agree with that, because I could even go on another campus that allows cell phones during lunch and students don't make eye contact or don't say, you know, good morning or good afternoon. But I'm happy that at our school at lunch, you know, our kids may not have as many things because we're in a lower socioeconomic region. But so I've got them soccer balls, footballs. They're playing basketball out there. We even started a program where, you know, I buy those family games like Connect Four or playing cards. I've even tried to teach them Chinese jump rope or Chinese jacks. And they can borrow those things from our library and, you know, use it out at recess. So I see more of the kids playing with each other, joking around with each other, and it's actually, you know, not on the screen or on their laptops, but they're actually out there talking and laughing and enjoying, you know, their time out with each other at lunchtime.
That just sounds so wonderful. I want to go to another caller. Stephen is calling in from Maui, a teacher as well. Stephen, please go ahead.
Oh, hi. So I guess I just wanted to comment that I do see a lot of effects for young people. I teach in the University of Hawaii system, and I teach dual enrollments where I go into the high schools. And yeah, kids are spending a lot of time on their smartphones. I'm not a Luddite by any means, but I do see that, especially the social comparison, like they always are looking at these people who are, you know, you don't just post a selfie, you take 50 takes of your selfie and you post the best one. So you're comparing yourself to people's imaginary best lives, and it leads to a lot of depression.
Thank you so much for that, Stephen. Britt, can you expand on that, this comparison that we see? You know, this is not limited to kids. I know that, you know, I try to limit my Instagram because it's not healthy for me, but I can't imagine. We understand that the brain is not fully developed till the age of 25. What does all that comparison culture do for young people?
So it's so hard because evolutionarily we are actually hardwired to compare, to socially compare to others. Because, of course, back in the caveman days, let's call them, if you were isolated from the group, if you weren't part of the group and you didn't fit in, then that was just certain death. So even as grown-ups and especially as children, we are hardwired to want to compare. Am I acceptable? Am I not acceptable? And nowadays, what are you going to look at? You're going to look at the picture, you know, coming online or the vacation. And so he's very on point. What this leads to is depression, because depression can sort of wind its way around negative thinking. I'm not good enough. I'm not fill in the blank. I'm not blank enough. And it can also start to sort of spiral down to place of shame and lots of discomfort with oneself. Depression also is a feeling of helplessness. No matter what I do, I won't be as skinny as her who just posted the thing, who may have airbrushed, like may have airbrushed, or this is her best angle. No matter what I do, I'll never be as buff as him. And when you compare, when you have helplessness, I'll never be with, I'm not blank enough, you really have a recipe for some very dark thoughts. And I think, unfortunately, social media is a hotbed for this social comparison, which in healthy doses is normal and fine. But when it's constant, like you said, sun up to sundown, a lot of kids online, when it's constant, you can imagine just the brain chemistry going to a very negative place and staying there.
Yeah, and to that constant point, the Pew Research Center did do a study and found that nearly a third of teenagers are on social media almost constantly. So that means that the phone is always present. They don't necessarily need to be looking at it, but that means it's always on. Ethan, I'm interested, you know, on a personal level, how you regulate your own screen time and also what you see in your friends. Are there people who are very, very much engaged? Are there people who reject it and say, I'm doing a flip phone or no phone? What's the sort of spread there?
Well, for me personally, I started off with app timers. So, you know, you put a time limit on your social media platforms, Instagram, Snapchat, etc. I found that even with that, it was still extremely hard to manage it. You know, you press ignore timer and you just keep going on. So after that, I moved towards, you know, just deleting the app overall. So I still have Instagram, but I deleted a lot of the other apps. And, you know, there was some, like, disagreement with, like, my friends. You know, they're like, because we kind of use that as a way to communicate and kind of use that to keep, you know, each other updated in our lives. But I decided to make that decision because I thought that was beneficial for me, and it might not apply to other people. I know some of my friends, they don't really try to regulate it. I have some friends that are really extreme about it. Like, they will go completely off phone. But I would say, in my opinion, the vast majority leans towards not regulating it as much.
Mm-hmm. And when you are, you know, when you are with, and this is going to make me sound very old. I have a 5 and a 7-year-old, so I'm parenting at a different age right now. But I think when I see groups of young people together, I do see a lot of young people who are together but on their phone. Do you find that, you know, how are you able to communicate when you're all sitting there looking at your device?
Yeah, I mean, it's just we're so prone to check our phones because we're so used to just getting those notifications, especially notifications. They're extremely, like, pulling, and we want to constantly check it. And when we grow up with that, you know, like when we're having a conversation and maybe things kind of die down, you know, the solution is, you know, you go check your phone, you go look for something to bring up. So, yeah, I mean, it's definitely difficult. And when people are hanging out, we're still using our phone sometimes.
We've got a caller now, a student calling in from Mililani. Logan, good morning. Please share your thoughts.
Hi, my name is Logan, and I'm a rising high school senior. And I also agree with the concerns of smartphones, but I know, at least for me, I use my phone for inspiration and motivation, especially as an athlete and to be looking up and applying for colleges. And I also have, like, questions saying, like, if you see other positives with smartphones, even with the downsides that it may have with things like social media time or stuff like that.
Logan, thank you for that. You know, there are some positives, and especially during COVID, we saw that the ability to stay connected. Principal Kuba, you know, how do you take that on? I know you're coming to us today as a principal, but also as a dad who's had to manage this. How have you navigated this with your own family, knowing that there are good points to this as well?
I'm lucky to have three daughters who kind of stayed away from the social media in the younger ages. As my wife and I, we both agreed that they shouldn't have it till, you know, later. And so I believe it helped them a lot. But there are, like the caller said, a lot of positives to it. And so as a parent, it's difficult to know what they're going on and what they're not. And a lot comes down to how you build those values. And so, you know, finding that balance and being able to talk to your children and to understand what they care about and what, you know. And you can also notice if they make a turn for the worse, too, is you notice changes in their behaviors. That's, you know, to me, a red flag as a parent to find out, you know, what's going on. So it is difficult. I see that with, you know, parents with young children in Costco or around. They utilize the cell phone or the iPad to keep children engaged, you know. And so that can be a good and bad thing. Depends what they're looking at on, you know, online.
Yeah, and I want to ask Britt about the value of boredom and letting the kid just be. We're going to do that after this break. This is The Conversation on Hawaii Public Radio. You can join our discussion by calling 1-877-941-3689. Stay with us. We'll be back with much more after this break.
Right now, baby boomers are taking full advantage of their retirement savings, and they're living large.
It's just sort of like a steady stream of spending by people who mostly are at the end of their working lives and want to enjoy themselves.
I'm Kristen Schwab. How boomers are driving the economy, next time on Marketplace.
Beginning this evening at 6.
Support for HPR comes from the Honolulu Board of Water Supply, committed to the conservation and protection of water resources for Oahu. Learn more about how to reduce water waste at boardofwatersupply.com.
Each week, New Dimensions explores the social, political, scientific, environmental, and spiritual frontiers with some of today's foremost social innovators, thinkers, scientists, and creative artists.
Hi, I'm Mark Nepo, author of You Don't Have to Do It Alone, and next time on New Dimensions, I'll be talking about friendship as an island of safety.
Beginning Sunday morning at 11.
Boredom and kind of building on something that Ethan was saying about playing those games during the breaks and then walking away and feeling like, what did I just do? And I know that I feel that way sometimes if I get off my phone. How did I just lose 45 minutes? What just happened? Mm-hmm. what are we doing with all this hyperstimulation, especially for the younger set that the principal was talking about in Costco at the restaurant? And not to judge, I've got little kids. I get it. But what does that do to the brain?
So it's so interesting because I heard the phrase one time and I've just latched on like grim death. It's only boring people get bored. So I'm bored. I said, well, only boring people get bored. No. What do I mean by that? I mean that boredom is actually a signal to the body. Like we had every emotion you have is signaling you to either do something or not do something. Okay. So you can imagine boredom is a signal that you should go do something. And if we're never bored, then we really don't hone that muscle. We don't stretch that muscle. And I can only imagine all the things that have been developed and introduced to the world via, I was just sitting around and I saw a box over there. So I'm a huge fan personally of boredom. And I think it is evolutionarily and very, very functional because it teaches us to then go find something to do or invent. And this is how we sort of have propagated as a species, not to get too technical. So without that, I can't say for sure what we're losing, but I feel like we're losing something.
Mm-hmm. Principal Kubo, what are your thoughts on that? What are we losing when we when we constantly stimulate?
When you said, not allowing them to be bored, it made me think about when I was younger, sitting around waiting and not doing something, but it actually made me think of things to do, whether games, or sitting there, or even, And so that's what I tell our kids sometimes at school, I tell them to go out and play football or join that group or go get this at the library, make up a game, with each other. And then they laugh but eventually they get it and they start doing things at recess. They, especially then when the new sixth graders come in, it takes some time before they start interacting with each other and engaging with each other. But I think you're right, is that if you're never bored, then you just don't seek other things to do or you don't use your mind to create things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there is some value in the stillness. Ethan, what are your thoughts on that, about just having that sort of mental space to create?
Yeah, I completely agree with everything that was just said. I think I realized as well, when you're constantly on your phone, it's kind of like there's so much influence and so much information that's just being put into your brain. It's kind of like, I like to refer to it as like brain fog. And when you finally put it away and you kind of just sit alone, I think that is so important and it's kind of missing nowadays. Because like mentioned before, when you're alone and you can finally think for yourself and you can think about things you need to do and things that's on your mind. So it's extremely important.
Yeah. So how do we lift that fog? Well, I want to go back to Jonathan Haidt and his book, The Anxious Generation. He has a 4-step plan for reducing smartphone use in young people. Let's take a listen.
No smartphone before high school. Just give them a flip phone. No social media till 16. Just don't let your kids open accounts and you check the apps on their phone. Phone-free schools and far more independence, free play, and responsibility in the real world. So what I'm saying is, just delay the age at which the kids are going to jump into this cesspool, clear this all out of middle school. Then we'll work on high school. But let's start by getting it out of elementary and middle school.
It sounds simple, but it also feels kind of hard. Britt, what are the conversations that you hear happening between parents and kids? All my friends have one. I'm going to miss out. I'm not going to be able to go to the mall or make plans. How do you advise parents to navigate the delay?
You literally sound exactly like my 14-year-old son. Did you just channel him somehow? How did that happen, Dawson? It's exactly what I hear. And what's so interesting is as many times as I hear this in the course of a day, I'm thinking, what would happen if I just gave your phone number to her and you gave your phone number to her and you all decided that we're not going to do it? I think what's hard is every family is trying to manage this in isolation. So I really like his ideas. We come together as a community or as a school or as a play group, and we say we're not going to do it. So much easier to do in a group rather than trying to do it, child by child, family by family. The conflicts are real. I challenge each person listening to this with a child to imagine how many times a day they have a conflict with their child over screen time. And then how many other conflicts are going on over eating your vegetables or whatever? And I would gather that 50%, if not more, is over screen time. So we really are, not that conflict's bad necessarily. However, there's always about the same topic. So-and-so gets TikTok. So-and-so gets Instagram. You put the, you know, the app on my phone that limits my screen time. Nobody else does this. They can stay up till 10 on their phones. It is exhausting for parents, and on top of trying to manage finances, trying to pay rent, trying to work a job, get promoted, and manage a marriage, it's just a lot for parents. I think I empathize deeply with them.
Mm-hmm. And Ethan, how old were you when you got a phone, and were you early or late compared to your peers?
So I got my phone going into the sixth grade, and I think I would consider myself late at the time because a lot of my peers already had phones.
Wow. And what do you think about the ideas that he laid out? No smartphone before high school, social media not till 16, phone-free school, and more free play.
Yeah, so for me, social media, I was told to delay it. And, you know, when I first got it, and I wasn't given any warning of, like, what exactly social media do. So, you know, I found myself looking at a lot of other people's profiles, comparing myself all the time. And, you know, I definitely think that if you can delay it, it would be helpful. But on the flip side, there's also that kind of fear of, like, missing out. And especially nowadays when there's so much trends and things are so trend-oriented, it's like if you're not with the trend, it's like there's that fear that you're not going to fit in. So I do think that there's different sides.
Yeah, these kids are facing so much. Principal Kuba, I'm interested also keying into one thing that Britt said about staying up at night and just how much time that we're spending on these devices. It's not just the missing out on the play at school, but also late into the evening. What do you see in students in terms of their sleeping habits and what this is doing to that?
Yeah, so I don't know the exact number, but I would say whenever my students come late to school, I always ask them, you know, why are you late? And I'd say 90% of the time it's because they went to sleep after midnight or 11. 11 is early for some of those kids who come late to my school, but most times it's after midnight. And then I say, well, what are you doing after midnight? And they all say they're playing games or they're on their phones. So at least the parents get them home and in their beds, but they still are on their phones. And by then, parents are sleeping and they don't know what they're doing. But we often have to have these parent meetings to educate and let them know that, yeah, they're letting us know they're on their phones till 2 o'clock in the morning. And so therefore they're coming to school at 10 or whatever it may be. And it's affecting their academics, not only their academics, but in their adolescent years, they're changing their brains right now. And it's going to be affecting them beyond just the middle school level. And I'm not sure how that will manifest itself in adulthood.
Mm-hmm. You know, it's so hard.
Sleep, right?
Yeah, and I was going to say, what's so hard for Principal Kuba and every teacher and parent is that during adolescence, what we're supposed to do as parents is allow them to find a sense of self. We're supposed to say things like, I trust you to make the right decision. But the right decision didn't get made. So it's sort of like I should trust my child to go to sleep on time and there'll be natural consequences in the morning. He or she will be tired. But the draw of that phone is so palpable and so powerful that we're competing against this other thing. So when we say, hey, I trust you to make the right decision and go to sleep on time, there's a chance they will, there's a chance they won't. And my best advice is you nudge and you give space to make the right decision. Your adolescent doesn't do that, doesn't go to sleep on time, you pull it back. In 6 months, you give a little bit more freedom, see if now is the magical time when they can do that. Nope, you pull it back. But what parents are up against, these sort of milestones, like to make the right decision and do the right thing, we're up against something quite powerful that wasn't there prior to the, you know, 20-teens. And so now our children's ability to make the right decision is hampered by the lure and the addiction of all the things. Parenting's just harder, I think, in that way.
Yeah. We want to hear from you, callers. So give us a call, 941-3689 or 1-877-941-3689 from the neighbor islands. You know, Principal Kuba, what strikes me is that I feel like we kind of know this in our bones. Like we know that this is not good for our children. Do you hear from other principals at your contemporaries about why they haven't adopted these policies? Is this a difficult thing to do?
Actually, I haven't heard from other principals regarding this cell phone policy that we have. In fact, I was surprised to hear that New Valley had it, so which I'm glad they do. But now that we're on radio, I'm happy to speak to any of my colleagues about it.
Yeah, and what would you tell them? I mean, is this a difficult thing to implement? And on the other side, what are the gains?
It hasn't been difficult. Maybe the most difficult with the students, but after, you know, they understand that it's fair and it's. I explain to them how it helps them, but I definitely don't get any pushback from parents. In fact, in extreme cases, I suggest to some parents that may I keep this phone over the weekend because they're abusing, you know, their phone, and pretty much every time they say, "Gladly, please keep it," you know, and so they know that we're helping their family out, their kids out, and it's just simple ways to get the kids on board, and we do have them on board, and right now during the school year, I'd say we have 10 kids who violate the cell phone policy, and that's really low.
Out of how many?
We have about 290 kids. So, but in a whole school year, most of the 10 will have either one or two incidents. And beyond that, the majority of our kids understand that cell phones should not be out during the school because we want them to engage in their academics and each other.
You know, I contrast that with what Ethan was describing about kids in the back of the class on earbuds, listening to music or playing, and just how difficult that is for educators. You know, going back to the teachers who are basically having to play whack-a-mole, give me your phone or put that away or I give up. I mean, that I feel like we're setting up our teachers for a lot of conflict.
Definitely. I mean, without a school-wide and everybody on the same page, then it becomes teacher by teacher, class by class. And the teachers who would want the kids to put it away, they become the bad guys. So it's, yeah, very difficult. And then the teachers who may not or ask the kids to put their phones away, then it affects their academics, right, and their classroom management. So, I found that for our school, it's really helpful.
Yeah. Ethan, what do you see with the teachers that you engage with, you know, with how they have to police this and what kind of approaches they take?
Well, yeah, it really varies. I know one of the methods some teachers use is they have these like phone cubbies. So basically during instructional time, you have to put your phone away. But on the flip side, you know, when there's a break or when perhaps they're doing something that involves phone, they will allow students to use it. And I think a lot of teachers do try to have that balance, because obviously during tests you don't want anyone cheating, but other times, you know, they think that, you know, we need a break, so we're going to let them use phones.
Yeah, we haven't even gotten to the cheating part. That's a whole other show. But, you know, I want to hear one last thought from Jonathan Haidt. You know, there is this feeling for a lot of parents that basically it's too late and that the genie is out of the bottle, but he says he believes we can turn this around in relatively short time.
If we could get half or more of the families to adopt these four norms, we would see a drop in rates of anxiety and depression within a year. And I can say this because whenever a school has done one of these, they get results. And then, and here's the key, you can't just take away the screens and say, oh, no, kids, you know, screens are bad for you. You know, you have to wait. You have to give them back what they most need and want, which is each other. Think about the most exciting times in your childhood. Mm-hmm. Were they times when you watched an amazing show on TV by yourself? Probably not. It's the times when you had a gang, a group, you're hanging out. Maybe it was one best friend or maybe it was a group, but you were doing something. There was some adventure. You were probably away from adults. Kids don't get that anymore. They don't have adventures anymore. We don't let them. So if we're going to reduce screen time, we need to give them back real engagement and fun in the real world. And so that's why I say in the book, what we've done is we have overprotected our children in the real world while underprotecting them online. We have to reverse both of those.
So, Britt, can we do it?
Oh, boy. He just expanded the dialogue, didn't he? I think back to this time I was living in Chicago, and I let my kids climb a tree because I would just, of course, my kids are going to climb a tree. And, boy, I got little kids. I got parents, like, with their wagging their fingers. How dare you? I was like, Well, they'll figure it out. And that really spoke to this overprotection that he's speaking about, which is, why can't a kid go climb a tree? Why can't we let the kids be a little bit more free range? I'm not sure extreme free range is always important, but like many of us sitting at this table, not sure, well, you're a little younger, but I remember hanging out on my bikes. I remember playing in sewers, which is really gross, but I'll admit it on the air. But what did I learn? Like, those were magical times when my parents were at home. There was a secure base, but my friends and I were out learning about the world. And it brings me back to that sensorial Maria Montessori moment where I had all five senses engaged for hours and hours and hours. And everything I learned was absorbed very palpably, very intensely. And I agree, that's what we're missing today. But is that a broad topic and really, really debatable by a lot of people who think the world is very scary and dangerous.
Yeah, and I think about now we're in the middle of summer, and the summer that I used to have, riding on my bike and free range, for sure. Let's hear from Emma on Maui. Go ahead, Emma. Good morning.
Hi, good morning. I've been thinking about, as an educator and a parent of an elementary child, and pretty much phone-free, screen-free, which is actually I'm finding very isolating for my child, in the sense that when she goes to someone else's house, I have to make sure who's got the screens, what's going to happen with the screens. And so as free as I want her to be to ride her bike all over the neighborhood and have these sensorial experiences, the rest of the world is kind of getting in the way. And I think that that's why it's really not about individual parenting decisions that's going to get us out of this mess. It's going to be bans that are system-wide, that are statewide, that are at every level of government, that our representatives need to pay attention to and start finding solutions for everyone, not just for the rich, because this is something that affects everyone. So I think we're never really going to solve this until we have laws that require this. And I'm so grateful to Principal Kubo. I cannot tell you how excited I was to turn the radio on and hear you speaking, because I've been working with principals in my daughter's school around this issue, and I know how hard it is. So thank you for that. But I just think that we need to think on a bigger level for everyone else, for all the parents who are dealing with this, and demand that this happen at a systemic state level and a federal level as well.
Principal, and thank you for that, Emma. Principal, I know you can only speak for your school, but do you think that there is an appetite for a more systemic change? I don't ask you to speak for the Ledge, but perhaps on the wider DOE level, for more schools to do what your school has done.
I haven't heard that recently or that come up. And those decisions do come down to DOE leadership or the Board of Education. I just speak for my school in that it has helped the teachers and it has helped the students and families.
Yeah. And Ethan, I know that you're not only a student, you're also the Board of Education student representative. Do you think that this is something that, you know, you'll be discussing in the year ahead?
I think it would really depend, because while I do think that a lot of people are pushing towards these restrictions, especially at the high school level, a lot of our stuff is revolving around online materials and stuff like that. So I think it would just really depend in the future.
Yeah, there is this tension. We are almost at the time now where we sort of round out and think about our final thoughts. But going back to, you know, what Jonathan Haidt was saying, it is really those four steps that he is suggesting: no smartphones before high school, no social media until 16, phone-free schools, and independence and free play responsibility in the real world. Brett, what are your final thoughts this morning as parents try to navigate this?
I couldn't agree more with, again, the author and the caller that just called in. And what she's describing is a collective effort. As a parent and certainly as a therapist, I can see that tension between I want my child to have those things that the author was talking about, but if no one else does it, then what? And so most parents just throw up their hands and they go, well, nobody else will do it, so I guess it's just not going to get done. So I'm a big advocate for these collective decisions. And, you know, I think for parents, if I could have a wish, it would be just to give themselves a little bit of a break. They are dealing with a lot of life and family dynamics. And on top of that, they're having to be the screen police. And I just feel like that's a lot for parents. And you know what? You're doing a great job. You're trying to limit that screen time. You're trying to put that parental controls app on the phone. And whatever little bit you're doing, you are going in the right direction. So I just applaud families out there dealing with this.
Yeah. Principal Kuba, what's your final message today on this issue?
I think to speaking not as a principal, but as a dad and husband, I was happy that my wife and I were on the same page as far as trying to delay. And we did that. And it got harder from our first child to our third child. But that was our mindset, is to delay, because we understood the negative effects of, you know, the screen time, social media. So I would encourage parents to do that. As far as schools, it has helped our school a lot. And like I mentioned earlier, it's nice to see the kids actually engaging with each other, laughing and, you know, enjoying that time, rather than, although they might be sitting next to each other, all on their individual screens. And it's nicer to see them engage with each other.
Yeah, and that time is so precious, right? You never get that. You never get that back. And Ethan, a final thought from you. I'm just reflecting on what the principal was talking about and thinking about, you know, growing up and getting to play with your friends and the importance of that development. What's your final message to your peers and to parents out there today?
I completely agree. I mean, you know, having cell phones, especially growing up and especially towards the later years, and having social media, you know, it's definitely very addicting. It's very pulling, and it kind of lessens the aspect of social interaction. But, you know, on the flip side, you know, nowadays there's so much resources online, especially with, like, you know, we have AI coming in and you have all these free resources. And, you know, personally, you know, when I have to study extra stuff, you know, I'm using the online resources. So I definitely think that, you know, some restrictions, you know, during instructional time particularly, would be beneficial to students' academic achievement. But in terms of, like, complete bans, you know, I think it's really, you know, it depends.
Yeah, yeah. And it's interesting, you said that you've been able to kind of limit yourself. You did the app timers that weren't not totally successful. How have you managed in the end to kind of keep these at bay?
Yeah, I mean, it's a continuous, conscious struggle. Like, it's not something that you can just get rid of. You have to keep working at it. But I found that it's definitely helped me a lot.
Okay, I think that's true for all of us. Thank you so much to all of our guests, Jarrett Middle School Principal Reed Kuba, therapist Britt Young, and BOE Student Board Member and Kaiser High School Rising Senior Ethan Yang. And we thank you, the listener, so many of you for joining us today. We appreciate it. Tomorrow, we've got a Hana Ho show highlighting our recent interviews about bugs. Have a comment to share about today's show? Call our talkback line at 808-792-8217. Or have a story that you'd like to share, email talkback@hawaiipublicradio.org. Find our archive conversations online by searching The Conversation on Spotify, Apple, or anywhere you tune in for podcasts. I'm Yenji Denise. Join us tomorrow for more of The Conversation.